knife is here. If you spoke, would you speak well of me? And half your life is here. Can I put you down for a guilty plea? Life is so fickle. The circus just called, they're out of you. And half your life is brought to you by sponsors.
Good morning and welcome to episode 135 of Taking the Charge with you from Regensburg, Germany. I'm back home. This is David Hine of Hine News. Great to have you on board once again. Lots to talk about this week. I'm gonna have to postpone one thing that kind of was hoping to talk about, but I'll get that in a minute. So first of all, let's just get rid of, let's take care of the things that we always have to do at the beginning, and that's the housekeeping. So basically, if you want to get in contact with us, go ahead and catch us at the Facebook group that is Taking the Charge. Just put that in there and you will get into the Facebook group. You can follow me on Twitter at Hine News, HEINNEWS. My email address is hinenews@gmx.de. Of course, the website is hinenews.com. On iTunes, go in there, rate, review us. Fantastic stuff if you can do that. All right, so like I said, lots to do, lots to talk about. It's great being back home after almost 4 weeks away, but lots of fun out there on the road. Saw lots of fun stuff. Actually, wish I could have seen some more stuff, but I guess that's just the way it works. The Final Four was, I watched the Final Four at a place called Real Sports in downtown Toronto, right next to the Air Canada Center, and it was a huge sports bar with this absolutely mammoth television, this huge screen. I think it was 39 feet. I don't know if it was 39 feet. It was mammoth. Actually, I guess 39 feet probably would have fit 39 feet high, and then whatever corresponding that much the width of that I was really impressed with Wisconsin. I mean, I had seen them obviously in the Elite Eight Sweet 16 out in LA, and I really liked Kaminsky. I really liked Decker. I was surprised. Wasn't shocked though that Wisconsin ended up beating Kentucky. Just had to think that the offensive efficiency. If a team was able to really actually get their offense. Work their offense against that great defense of Kentucky, and you've just figured Kentucky's not going to be able to score loads of points. They're not really refined offensively, and Kentucky got it done. Great showing by Kaminsky. Decker showed that he can play against that length. Really, I think Hayes showed some nice things. The Harrisons, their 25 points along with Towns is 16-9. Just wasn't enough offense. They ended up not shooting horribly. It was basically right around 50%. I think it was 49%, something like that. But they didn't really. I think they attempted 5 threes. Didn't really get to the free throw line, and despite all that length, we're out rebounded, which that's really pretty amazing. Just goes down to, I guess, comes down to the structured system that and mind frame and everything that that Wisconsin was able to put together. I don't want to really talk too much at all about Michigan State losing to Duke. Duke beating, really, you know, pummeling Michigan State. You know, Valentine hit those three threes early on, and you know that was the, you know, once Duke caught up after that, it was pretty much over. You know, Okafor just had no match, and Winslow was just his all around great self. And final, you know, okay, I wrote the column last week saying why I was rooting for Wisconsin. And you know, it would have been great to see Wisconsin able to do it, see Kaminsky go out as a winner. And you know, I mean, he went out as a winner. Didn't win the title, but he went out as a winner. You have to definitely say that. Won the hearts of a lot of people as well. You know, Decker. You know, Decker's gonna remember that 0-for-6 3-point performance for a long time. Thinking, what if? And you know, Hayes. You know, once again showed that he's able to perform at a pretty high level. You know, if obviously Kaminsky's gone, Jackson's gone. I think Gasser's gone, Dukin's gone. Hayes will be back. I think probably depending, you know, Wisconsin season next year is going to be basically dependent on whether or not Decker comes back. And you know, a lot of people were impressed with what he was able to do against the length of Kentucky. That he was able to match that length, that athleticism, and really do a good job against it. Just wasn't hitting his shots. The 0-for-6, you know, that really hurts. And you know, I don't know how many games he went 0-for-6 in the season. Probably wasn't too many. Actually, I see right here he's declared for the NBA draft. So that's it. Looks like it's going to be Nigel Hayes' team next year. And, you know, he's, you know, it's, they built that team to withstand one or two, exits next year. It'll be a little bit tougher with guys like, Jackson and Gasser leaving, but you know, he's a good coach, and I know they have at least one of the redshirt freshmen that they have, EJ Happ, I think. I know Happ, can't remember his first name exactly, but I know Happ is definitely a nice prospect in my eyes. He was absolutely amazing at the Albert Schweitzer tournament here in Germany. So I don't know if that, you know, what he's going to do about that. You know, if he's going to be able to, I'm not sure exactly if he had an injury or whatever, but, you know, definitely I thought, you know, pretty highly of him. Duke, you know, Wisconsin got their game plan. You know, they were able to get Okafor in foul trouble, even Winslow in foul trouble. But you know, Okafor is really taken out of the game, but you know, it was Cook really playing well, Jones playing really fantastic, and Grayson Allen. You know what I mean? Grayson Allen was the fourth wheel, if you will, on those big four freshmen, along with Jones, Winslow, and Okafor. And really, as soon as Suleiman was kicked off the team, you know, he really stepped up and showed why he's an elite prospect. At least that he was that in high school. And you know, it was a bit of a coming out party for sure, and was impressed. You know, he did a lot of things also in the game against Michigan State. He scored 12, scored 16 in the final, and had 9 in the semifinal against Michigan State. So, what this team's gonna look like? Who knows? You know, I mean, it's pretty much a given that Okafor's gone. You know, Winslow's gonna. You know, I see that Winslow's been has declared. You know, they came in together. You know, is Jones going to go out now or not? If Jones, you know, Cook is gone, so you know, if Jones goes as well, you know, it's going to be Grayson Allen's team. And then I suppose you have to say even Emile Jefferson. You know, Jefferson. I had ran the interviews after the show last week, and it was you know, he didn't really get much pub on that, but you know, didn't have many people asking him questions, but you know, definitely had a good game. So yeah, we'll have to see. Should be fun. Off season, you know, declaring for draft, whatnot. Let's move over to obviously the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague playoffs have started. They started Tuesday night with CSKA Moscow knocking off, routing Panathinaikos at home 93-66. Fenerbahce getting past Maccabi 80-72. So, you know, I have, you know, put my picks out there on Facebook, and I said, I think Madrid maybe will drop a game. I have Madrid dropping a game against FS. I just think that FS slows it down enough that, one of those games, that they'll be able to sneak in. Fenerbahce, I think, will win in four games against Maccabi. Would not be surprised if that goes to five games. Would not be surprised if Maccabi wins it in five games. Would not, I guess I'd probably be surprised if Maccabi were to win in four games. That'd have to be that they'd win the next three. But I would not be surprised whatsoever if Maccabi do get in there and make it back to the Final Four, the reigning champs. CSKA, I have them in three. I just don't think that there's enough offense to keep up with Maccabi. And then Olympiacos, I have actually beating Barcelona in what I think is going to be a fantastic quarterfinal playoffs. Really looking forward to that one. The crafty veterans at the guard position. You know, Plyce played really, really well, against Galatasaray. You know, there's just, you know, just so much intrigue in that one. I have CSKA, beating Olympiacos. It was in what will be their first game. Kirilenko's first game against Olympiacos since the final that they lost at the buzzer, and they'll play against Madrid, who would then beat Fenerbahce, and I have Moscow grabbing a title with a new coach, first year coach, well, first year with the club. I have him winning 83-78. So those are my picks on that, and really. Yeah, it seems to me really the Olympiacos Barcelona one series is really the only interesting one. Maybe the Fenerbahce Maccabi one could see some intrigue as well. What else do we have? Hoop Summit was on Sunday. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I do have a link to that, and so I will be watching that in the very near future. Just, you know, Jamal Murray went off, 30 points, 5 assists. Cannot wait to see that. Cannot wait to see Simmons nearly going for a triple-double, 13 points, 9 boards, 9 assists. Really kind of looking forward to see how he handled that ball. I know there was the assist behind the back. There was the sick coast-to-coast after the offensive rebound dunk where he got past two guys who had angles on him, you know. You know, Scal Libisseri, you know, looking forward to see what kind of game he has. Don't know much about him. So, really, I guess a little bit of Maker. I didn't hear too much great stuff about Maker in the about the game, but you know, did grab 10 rebounds, missed his 5 shots, but you know, I can imagine that they probably used him as a pretty big guy, and so you know, I don't know if that's his real position down the road. I think he's more 3-4-4-3, somewhere in there. Yeah, so just kind of looking forward to see what everybody did. Of course, getting to see what Federico Messini did, and also see how Juchi performed, and get a chance to see a couple of the Americans. Swanigan, you know, a couple of them I know from the U-17s last year, Rab, Newman, Swanigan. You know, Zimmerman's a 7-footer from Vegas who we'll kind of be interested to see. So, yeah, there's a couple of guys on the U.S. Obviously, Kennard led the team in points with 22. But definitely looking forward to checking that one out. So, one of the guys, actually two of the guys on that international, that world select team who won, actually, I guess, was... Actually, it's not really a surprise. That was a really great team, and obviously we had Marin Sedlacek on the show a few weeks ago, talking about the selection of that team. So it wasn't a huge shock that they did win, because you know there was a lot of talent on that team, and but two of the guys on the World Select team, their school where they go to, they're Canadians. Well, they're not Canadians, but they're going to a Canadian high school. One of them is Canadian Jamal Murray, obviously, who was at the U-17 Worlds, and then will probably be one of the main guys for Canada at the U-19 World Championship this summer. And the other one is Thon Maker. Both of them are playing together this year. Have been playing this year together at Orangeville Prep, which is located about an hour north of Toronto. And I had the great opportunity to get an interview with the coach of Orangeville, Larry Blunt, and took the drive up from downtown Toronto. And went up there and had a wonderful chat with him, and that of course is the interview of the week this week. So here's my chat with Larry Blunt, the head coach of Orangeville Prep. And beforehand, he didn't have the exact exact records of the team. Don't hold anything against him, but here's the interview. Great information in here about a very fascinating program.
Okay. So, Coach Blunt, so we're actually here at the Athletes Institute. And there's an Orangeville Prep, let's say, dynamic. Incorporated in this entire situation. Give us a little bit of a breakdown for those who might not, you know, really, who might not be familiar with the situation. Is this basically just where the Orangeville Prep school, is this where they practice, is this where they work out, this is where they play? Talk a little bit about Orangeville and the Athletes Institute.
Well, Dave, the Athlete Institute was created, you know, and it was created to help athletes achieve their goals, both on and off the court. It was from a strength standpoint, from an interpersonal standpoint, from an athletic standpoint, from a social standpoint. I mean, it was always bigger than basketball. But what we did was, and I've been here for 2 years, but we have a great partnership with Orangeville District Secondary School. There's roughly 1,600 students in the school, and it's... You know, it's a great place where the school has a great relationship with us, but it's also great because the kids don't get any grace for being athletes. You know, if you don't turn your work in, you fail. They have to work just as hard as every other student. It kind of allows them to have basketball, and then we have a great partnership where they work with us academically. You know, so from there, it's just been a really, really great partnership. Very no different than the Finley Preps of the world, the Huntington Preps, and a lot of the places in the U.S. that have had this kind of model.
Mm-hmm. So this is just where they, the actual facilities where they practice.
We practice here, they train. Yes, certainly. Certainly eat, do all those things. We have a, you know, chiropractor, all sorts of different resources here to help these guys really obtain the optimal level of training that they can, you know, be able to have access to.
And how long has the relationship been? I mean, you said you've been here for 2 years. How long has the relationship between Athletes Institute and Orangeville been?
This is the fifth year.
Fifth year.
That program's been in existence. Yes.
And the goal basically to get to give these guys the best possible training, make them as good as possible.
Yes, it is. I mean, we've done, and I guess I should go back and back up. We had the Athlete Institute model for 3 years. And then last year we kind of transitioned into the Orangeville prep piece, which was a high school team that was able to travel to the United States and play against high school kids, and that was, we did that to maintain that distinction so there was no confusion between whether our guys were high school kids of age to play in high school tournaments.
They also play high schools here?
Yes, we do. We do. We play in high schools in Ontario as well.
Yeah. Okay. We'll come back to that. Let's go a little bit about yourself. You came here, you said, 2 years ago. I saw, actually, one of the things that kind of stood out was played football.
Yeah.
I know probably people have asked you about that. Give us a little bit about your background. I saw, I think it was assistant or sort of probably sort of bench coach, not bench coach, but just on coaching staffs of various NCAA schools. Give us a little bit rundown of your background then.
I played college football at James Madison. Mm-hmm. Probably hold a distinction of being the worst player in school history. I always say, no, just kidding. When football ended, I got a chance to coach basketball, and I had a really good relationship with one of the basketball coaches on the staff at James Madison, mm-hmm. Robert Bricky, who played at Duke. And through that relationship, I realized that coming out of high school, I had to make a decision between playing football and basketball. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I really missed basketball, and I kind of volunteered and kind of worried him to death. He gave me an opportunity. And then preceding that, I coached high school for a year, and then I left there and I started coaching college. I coached at Eastern Mennonite. Mm-hmm. Then I left there and went to Shaw University, which is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Left there and then went to Hamden, Sydney for 5 years, where I was with Coach D. Vick. And I moved to Canada. I had an opportunity to coach one of the new teams in the National Basketball League of Canada. So I was the head coach for the Oshawa Power, which is now the Mississauga Power. Mm-hmm. And then this.
What league is that? Is that a professional team?
Professional league, the National Basketball League of Canada.
Okay.
And after that season, I got a chance to do this, and it's more in line with my passions. I got a chance to be connected with college coaches. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to be able to work with young kids and teach them the game. And in Canada, they had never had at this level a basketball program that, you know, could go to the States and compete. All the best players would play here. These coaches did an incredible job, you know, with Andrew Wiggins, the Tyler Ennises, the Anthony Bennett's, high school coaches on up to 9 and grade 10. They did a really great job developing them. The kids would play and then they would leave and go to the U.S. So from my perspective, you know, a lot of people don't hear the horror stories of what it's like to try to figure out holidays, what it's like to try to figure out, you know, birthdays and being homesick away from home. So we wanted to create an option where you could still play the same schedule, get the same training, if not better. You still have access to coaches evaluating. You still have access to playing against elite level talent every day. You know, we thought with our experience collectively as a staff, having NCAA experience, pro experience, high school experience, you know, Division I experience athletically, we thought it was a neat opportunity to bring all of that here and to kind of build from there. And, you know, a year and a half later, we feel like we're starting to gain some serious ground.
So was that in place when you came here, or was that sort of your idea that you brought with you?
Well, the vision, you know, Jesse Tippin and his father, that was their vision, to have, you know, really elite level athletes.
Right.
And up until a year and a half ago, they had not had a Division I player. And through the relationships with CIA Bounce, I'm a part of that program and really developed strong relationships. Tony McIntyre and at that point Mike George and those guys and their staff, they were like, well, wait a minute, we would love to kind of partner and work with this. And a year and a half later, I mean, we've been really, really fortunate. We're on pace to have 12 Division I players, some guys on the NBA draft.
When you say Division I player, what do you mean then?
Guys that will or have been offered a Division I scholarship on our team this year.
So you say that you say then Wiggins and Ennis and Bennett, they're not considered that because they weren't here when they got those offers?
Yes, well, they didn't come here. you know, Bennett and Wiggins and all those guys, they went to, for example, Wiggins, Andrew Wiggins went over to with Gus at what is the name of the school? It's Gus Janopoulos is at Vaughn Secondary School.
Okay.
So he was there for a couple years before he went to Huntington
before
Prep.
Okay.
And then if you look at Anthony Bennett, you know, he was at a school in Brampton before he went.
Okay.
And Tyler, and this was at Father Henry Carr. So there's always been a lot of talent. And in the GTA, you look at Gil, Cesar Montague, that's at Missouri. You look at Negus Webster Chase. I mean, that's just been countless Division One guys. But none of them were staying here. They would play, and then when they get to 10th, 11th grade, they would have to go south for exposure. So this is the first time that there's been a program that have multiple Division I players, and you know we're on pace to have 12 in a year and a half span.
Is that your selling point? I don't know if you want to call it selling point. Is that your selling point, saying that?
I think we have great people. I mean, I think when you really start at it, you look at the Tippings, who are the owners and the president of, you know, they're just, they have a heart for helping. And I think, you know, when people have a chance to get to know our staff, our assistants, our, you know, our staff, our support staff, our nutritionists, our chefs, when they get to know them, I think the common denominator, and I'll always say this, is we have great people. And, you know, I think from there, I think if you look at this model, a lot of the kids that are going to the South to come back are saying, man, this is incredible. You see our facilities, you see the way we travel. I mean, we do everything first class. And I think we have a lot of resources in place to really help kids have an optimal experience.
So Jamal is a guy who's from not far from here. Was he already here when you came? Did you kind of bring him in, or how did it work with Jamal?
Well, I was helping to coach the CIA bounce team.
Okay,
right. And we're fortunate to have a really good relationship
with
Jamal.
Where are they? Are they in Toronto, or are they?
Yes, in the GTA, Greater Toronto area.
Greater Toronto.
And that's where all the Wiggins, the Bennett, the, you know, a lot of the better players in recent years have come through that program. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list is really long.
Yeah.
So from that, I mean, the last two number one overall picks, Anthony Bennett and Wiggins, both played in that AAU program. So the relationship with Jamal and his family, Roger and Sylvia, was really built and developed. And to be honest, they took a chance on us because this wasn't at that point an option that had yielded Division One success. Or you know, there've been a lot of guys that play college, whether it be Division Two, junior college, and AIA, etc. But to that point, no one had said, you know, wait a minute, I'm gonna stay and have a chance. And he stayed and he got a chance to play at a Nike Hoop Summit. He, you know, had a really good showing at AAU, and you know, he really his draft stock, his, you know, name on NBA boards, his college recruitment, his game, his body, all those things really start taking off. And then I think from there, that's when people start saying, wait a minute, that's not a half bad option. And
how important was he? You know, you say it's not a half bad option. How important was a guy at that level who had already had a name to say, all right, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to go here? How important was that for your goal to keep guys here, not let them go south, or not having them want to go south?
I think it was, at that point, unprecedented. I mean, I would say it was, you know, I don't think there's a word big enough to describe how much of an impact that had on high school basketball in Canada. Because to that point, in recent years, and in the modern day of college basketball, it had never been done. Everyone says, you leave. And that's the, you know, and a lot of people, to his credit and his family's credit, a lot of people were in his ear saying, what are you doing? If you go to the U.S., you'll blow up. If you go to the U.S., you'll be great. You know, if you stay here, you're not going to have those opportunities. And he stayed the course, and a year and a half later, the proof's, you know, really in the pudding. We always say, I mean, it's, you know, he's being recruited by every major college in the U.S. He's on, you know, draft boards, being a top 10 kind of kid. He's played the Nike Hoop Summit twice.
Played World Championship.
Yes, he's, you know, he's a really, really, he's been able to accomplish it. And, you know, I think when Thon and Mature and his brother both decided to come, and Coach Smith, I think it really just took us to the next level, you know. And I think, you know, when you look at those two guys, I mean, I think they will go down in Canadian history as being two pioneers of, you know, of this movement.
When you heard that Thon was let's say both of them. I mean, obviously Thon was the beer name at that point for sure. When you heard them, that Thon said, yeah, I'll come up here, what were you thinking?
Well, I've known Coach Smith, his guardian, and Thon from my time in Virginia. And, you know, we have really good relationships with he and his AAU coach at that time, Coach Ty White. And, you know, Coach Smith, has a lot of people don't know, he was a Division I basketball player. He has Division I coaching experience. And, you know, for those guys to make the decision to come, I mean, he's been an incredible asset to our staff, to our program. I mean, he just has vision. And he's been around and helped develop countless, you know, Division I players and guys that are having a chance to play professionally. So, you know, from our perspective, you know, when they came up last year, they had a few things they needed to do from a visa standpoint. They needed to leave the U.S. to do it. And then when he called and he asked, could he come hang out? And I think Thon fell in love with the facility. I think he fell in love with, you know, just the pace of life here. I think he fell in love with being insulated away from a lot of the, you know, the hype and those things that he was getting. And I think it put him in a position where he could really focus on basketball. And to date, you know, he's gained 20 pounds. He's really worked on his body, to his credit. You know, I think his game, I mean, at this point, you know, I think a lot of people were like, why? But we, you know, I think at this point we're starting to look at it as people are like, why not? Why wouldn't you consider an option that could be, you know, where you got resources in place to really achieve your goals? And I think in the long term, I think he'll look back at this experience and to help him as another stepping stone to take him where he's ultimately looking to go.
You mentioned that some of the guys who were here and did go down and then and they kind of said, you know, hey, this was, you know, this is a pretty good place. Where would you rank this place as far as you know, even some of the big let's call them college prep places in the States?
Well, I think I've had the luxury of being on both sides, mm-hmm. you know, because I've obviously coached college and I've recruited different guys in various programs.
Most institutions, right?
Certainly, and we have a really good perspective. Our director of basketball operations, Coach Tony McIntyre, his sons went to St. Benedict's. He had a son to go to Lake Forest. He's had kids to go everywhere, and he's helped with the kids to facilitate the transition from the Canada to the U.S. to play prep school. So I think we have a really good, you know, pulse. And what we've tried to do is those places are still, we've tried to be really clear that those are really still great options. I mean, you can't argue with their success, the, you know, Brewster, St. Benedict's. And we tell kids all the time, I mean, they're great options. But I think it's very challenging. And even from a U.S. standpoint, if you look at their rosters from kids being all over the place, you know, our whole team lives within an hour radius. And I think if you could have all the things that they could have, I think our strength and conditioning, I think you could debate, could be better in some cases. Academically, we have a full-time tutor. We have a full-time academic coordinator. So I think we have, you know, I think if I was to say, I think we have resources that are, you know, on par, if not better. But our goal is to find the negative things that were in those places and the areas of improvement and the areas where guys want it, you know, a little bit better, a little bit more. And we want to maximize those areas where we really excel, and we want to minimize the areas where guys weren't having success and try to learn from other people's paths. But we're ever evolving, that's for sure.
Yeah. Plus, it's still a very young program.
Certainly.
If you mentioned that, you know, Orange Prep's never had a Division I. You know, you're pushing the envelope. You're doing all this work. You guys are doing all the work here. You guys, everybody, you know, everybody here, doing all the work here. What other places, either in GTA or, you know, in other states, you know, here, you know, where else, you know, where else do you see a push at the high school level here in Canada?
Well, we have currently 4 Division I players that have signed national letters of intent. Can you give me 1 second, please? So at this point, you know, we have 4 guys that have signed them: Jalen Poyser, Miles Seward, Jelani. Kyle Alexander has countless offers. He's waiting to make his decisions. Alonzo Walker will have a Division I. So we have 3 currently. We'll have 5, 6, maybe 7 by the end of this year.
Right, right.
But, you know, I think as a result of what we've done and what the Tippins have, you know, been generous enough to really give us opportunities to accomplish, I mean, look at, there's all sorts of programs that are gaining momentum. If you look at, you know, the Bill Crothers of the world, the McNabs, you know, if you look at even St. Marcellinus, I mean, there's 6, 7, 8 schools that are really starting to gain momentum because kids are seeing what these guys are doing. They're seeing them travel. They're seeing them, you know, they're becoming, you know, kids that have a face in Canada. When I was in the U.S., I mean, if you go to Finley and Huntington, people are like, oh, that's such and such. Oh, that's such and such.
Right.
And I think now with basketball, the popularity really increasing, guys seeing Anthony, seeing Tyler, they're seeing Bennett, they're seeing all these guys, Tristan Thompson. Now I think the high school movement, because they've seen it here and they can kind of taste it, I think is really starting to take form. And, you know, in 10 years, we're excited to see. Hopefully we don't have to go to the U.S. to play, you know, full schedule. We can play 10 games, you know. 5, 7, 10 games in the U.S. and then be able to play a schedule here, because it brings coaches and it helps to build a whole culture of high school basketball in this country.
You mentioned those other schools. I'm not aware of where they are. Are they around here, or are they like in Toronto area, or are they elsewhere? Are they on the West Coast?
No, they're all here. I mean, you know, we haven't had a chance to go west or east to play yet.
Uh-huh. But do you know of anything going on in the West Coast that's kind of helping push it, or no, or just you're not aware of it?
I'm not too familiar. There's really good AAU programs with like Drive, with Pasha, and you know the Wolves, and there's a lot of really good programs that are sprinkled. From a high school standpoint, I mean, Toronto, the GTA is, I think, the fourth largest city in North America. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you really have like New York City from a population standpoint, and now basketball starting to catch on. So it's, you know, I don't think there's any, I think it won't be long before you have 15, 20 really good high school teams, and it's, you know, it's no different in the U.S. from a basketball standpoint.
Yeah. But right now, mainly having to stay in the Toronto area.
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure.
Talk about the season then. I mean, because you went down, you know, you took your lumps here and there. But, I mean, you know, these are high-level guys, you know. And, you know, some of your guys are going to be Division I. Some of you guys are going to, you know, are definitely NBA prospects. But, you know, some of these other schools are you know, playing with pretty high-level guys and playing against high-level guys all the time.
Sure.
Talk about the season in general. What you think you guys really learned? What you want to take out of it, and then looking towards for next season.
We finished 34-11. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll take it, and you know, I think a lot of the losses I've learned from specifically. You know, and I'll be the first to take responsibility. Our schedule was ridiculous. You know, and I think for us, we every game that we played, for the most part, in the U.S. was on the road. It was a true road game, both being an international game. And, you know, and I didn't do a very good job of balancing that. You know, for example, we played in Las Vegas. We played in California. And we left here from Orangeville at 4:30 for a 6 a.m. flight. You get to the airport, and then we played a 9 o'clock Pacific time game. And if you do that the same day, I mean, you don't give the kids a really good chance. But from our standpoint, we had to build a brand, an international brand, where, you know, our first 3-4 trips, people were like, who was that, Orangeville? And then by our last 3 or 4 trips, everybody like, oh, that's Orangeville Prep. And guys are running up. And so I think that was the first priority. The second one, and the biggest priority was really priority one, was to help the guys to get exposure. And so everyone that's graduating is going to have an opportunity to earn a scholarship. That is huge. You know, that's never been done. So, you know, I think our record was 34-11 for our first year, considering who we played and how we played them. I mean, I think, you know, I couldn't be more excited, and especially with moving into next year, with being able to shape our schedule now. We committed to a lot the year before because we weren't sure if we're going to be able to get into things, and we wanted to honor those commitments. So, you know, I think we'll play a schedule with a lot of games next year, but I don't think it will be as heavy, and I think our record will reflect that. But we couldn't be more proud of the guys. I mean, they battled. I mean, between that and school, I mean, it was some really, 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 really heavy travel, and they battled. I mean, we played in Richmond, Virginia. We left with half of our guys on Thursday. The other half had to finish some schoolwork because they weren't in good academic shape at that point. They drove down, got to the gym 30 minutes before tip-off. We played, we won. We went back to the hotel, got there about 10 o'clock. We woke up in the morning at 7, drove to New York City, didn't get a hotel because we were just going to play. Rode around the city. We played at 7 o'clock in New York, lost at the buzzer by 3. That game ended by 11 o'clock. We drove from there.
Who was that against?
It was against, in New York, we played against, they all run together.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. So then you left at like 10 o'clock?
Yes, 10 o'clock, and by the time we ate, it was 11, mm-hmm. And then we drove from there all the way to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Massachusetts. We get there at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then we sleep, get up in the morning at 7 o'clock for breakfast to play a 11 or 12 o'clock game at Hoop Hall. So I mean, and we lost that game, but that's not on the kids. That's on me. I mean, that's almost impossible travel.
Yeah.
You know, so from our standpoint, I mean, we look at that and, you know, when you look at who we've played, I mean, I think you would be really hard-pressed to find a team that played a schedule when you combine the travel, who we played, where we played them, how we played them. I think to finish 34-11 is really, really,
like you
really
said,
incredible.
Everything on the road too.
Certainly, it's but I think our guys will be even more prepared because when they get to college, it's going to get easier.
Right.
You know, they won't have the same regimen. And from my college experience, it's really challenging, but they're not going to do what we had to do from a game standpoint.
Right. You know? As far as the response from the college preps in the States, what kind of response did you get from those guys, from the coaches, administrators, whatnot, of what you've been able to put together so quickly up here?
Excuse me, from a college standpoint or from a high school
prep? From high school. From the high school college prep either the you know, the coaches themselves, coaching staffs themselves, or the administrators, what kind of response did you get from the high school colleagues then back down states?
I think they think the one thing that most people say is that we have just first class individuals, just from a, you know, our staff and, you know, our assistants are incredibly awesome. They've always been professional. Our kids are great. You know, they're always extremely grateful and they're very, very, very appreciative of everything. But I think that initially there was a little bit of resistance, or I would say a little bit of, you know, pushback, because I think a lot of the really talented guys were coming from Canada. But I think now, you know, they've realized that there's just so much talent up here. You know, we're only going to be able to take, you know, to fill our teams the right fits and the guys that really fit what we're doing and that it makes sense. And I think now that they've done that, they're starting to realize, like, wait a minute, like, you know, this could be a good option. And then I think you start pointing to the Raptors and what they've done. You look at the Blue Jays, you look at CIA Bounce from AAU standpoint, the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens. Like, there's a precedent that's been set that Canada, even though it's, you know, technically not in the United States, it's, you know, essentially USA North.
Right. I forgot what I was going to ask. One of the things that you when you were talking about the college preps, I may come back to that. When you come back, the college preps,
sure,
in the States, you mentioned also that there's so many guys from abroad, and you guys have I remember what I was going to ask. I'll come back to that right now. Are you the only school institution that's going down, that went down and played games in the States from Canada, or was there anybody else that did that?
There's a couple. Bill Crothers, okay. I think Marcelinas went down.
Okay.
Henry Carr went down. There's a few.
But not as extensive as you guys.
No one does it like we've done.
Right. Okay. And how many games would they play then?
I would say max 5, 6, 7 maybe.
Okay. How many did you play then, total?
Probably 25.
I mean,
a lot.
What was the record here in Canada?
We were undefeated.
Undefeated?
Yes.
How many games?
I would have to look up numbers. I would rather not.
Oh, no, whatever. Whatever it was.
What we fight, I mean, and this is off the record.
Don't even say it then.
Yeah.
You can tell me afterwards.
Okay.
So, college prep, we'll go back down to what I was asking before. So, college preps in the States, you know, they're getting all these also international guys. Also, you know, who want to go to high school, who want to be closer to the NBA,
sure,
their eyes, you know, even though guys get discovered in the, you know, abroad all the time. You guys are still, it's still young here, but do you have any, I mean, okay, the Makers are something different, is a totally different story, but maybe also because of that, maybe because Jamal is an international name, is there any interest from people abroad to come here as a college press, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's starting to really pick up. I mean, and it's, to be quite frank, it's much easier to get into Canada than it is to get in the U.S. And then I think you can maintain your international status, which is a really, really neat feature, while at the same time still getting exposure because you're so close to the U.S. So I think it makes, you know, it makes sense for a lot of reasons, and we're starting to get approached by a lot of people saying, wait a minute, you know, let's look at that, because you can, you know, you really see where you get to stack up against the best of the best. And I think also the training piece, you know, I think is incredible. I mean, the guys can really improve their vertical leap, their shuttle runs and all those sorts of things in addition.
So you do have solid offers, or not offers, but interest from abroad.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
And are you looking to do that, bring people in for next season already, or is that for even next year down the road, or
just looking for the best fit? You know, I mean, we have 12 spots on our team, and then Coach Brandon has 12 on his team. And then, at some point we'll expand, but it's all about finding the best fit. You know, we've turned down a lot of really good players because it's got to make sense for the kid. It has to be a scenario where the young man is going to have an opportunity to really continue to grow in his game, expand, and get the exposure. It doesn't make sense to bring 12 really talented 12th graders, rising 12th graders, because if you bring those guys, it's going to be hard for all of them to really showcase.
Right.
If we can mix it, whereas a couple of 9th graders, 10th, 11th, 12th, and it's a good balance.
Also, so that you have somebody coming back for next year.
Certainly.
And get experience for 2 years down the road when they have to take over.
Certainly, but more importantly, just so they can be, receive the proper exposure. If you have 12th graders, then it doesn't help them because all of them can't showcase what they can do to earn a scholarship.
Right. You mentioned Brandon and his team. Give me details on that again.
Yes, he has Division I guys on his team as well. I mean, his program is incredible. Great coach.
Is that here? Is that?
Yes. Yes, we both play out of the same facility and train together and live together and work out together.
Okay. Yeah. But they don't do. Is that considered the second team then, or
no,
how does that
not.
Work then?
It's just two different streams. They're both really, really talented. I mean, he has Division I players, guys that all of them will get a chance to play after high school. They're just two different streams.
Do they represent a different school then, or
no? They go to Orangeville District as well.
Okay.
Yes.
And then when you go on a trip to the States. But you take your team, and does he have a different schedule then? Or?
Yes, they play a different schedule, and they played in the hoop not hoop hall, but they've played they played in a lot of the high school events as well. You know, they go down and play against Fishburne and a lot of the really good U.S. schools as well.
Okay, I guess. There's a lot of discussion. AAU basketball. A lot of people. Let's call it demonize it. Where do you stand on that? You have it on a little bit of a different perspective because you're also up here. I mean, you're playing those teams, but you're also up here. What do you think about the debate on AAU basketball?
I think it's like anything else. I mean, you have some really, really good AAU programs that have good people and that do it right. And then you have some really, really bad AAU programs. And I think from being around AAU extensively, from being from my affiliation with multiple AAU programs, I think the few bad apples have really spoiled it for the rest of the bunch. But I think all in all, I think AAU is a great concept. I think it's, you get a chance to showcase your talent. It's the best of the best. I do think it's a bit challenging because those guys don't get to play together. But I think a lot of the horror stories and the AAU negative things are a byproduct of a small percentage of people. And I think AAU is a great thing. I think you can get a bunch of coaches in the same place to evaluate kids. And it gives a lot of kids opportunities that may or may not have gotten those. I think it's a great thing. I just think it's, I guess it goes back to the point of I think a few bad apples have spoiled it and kind of marred the brand, if you will. But I think it's a great thing for sure.
There's a pretty good rivalry up in a little further north in Ottawa with Carleton and Ottawa. There's rumblings of maybe Scrum trying to probably Philip trying to get in Johnny B into the NBA. And obviously Dave Smart's doing a great job up there at Carleton. How far are you from having an elite guy or at least pretty high level guy, maybe not necessarily elite, but stay here in Canada to go to college in Canada?
Dave's a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, for starters, his track record it speaks for itself. And they're recruiting guys on our team. I think it's a great option. You know, I mean, it's he's you get a, anytime you can have an opportunity to play for the best of the best and have a chance to play for an established program with an established coach that has an established reputation that you have to consider as a great school, great academically. So they currently are recruiting guys on our team, and you know, we will support it. You know, it's all about the right fit. It doesn't mean the South going to the U.S. to play college basketball is the right fit. It's all about the right fit for each individual and helping them achieve their long-term goal.
How important would it be that, you know, a scrub or, you know, one of the guys that went there, maybe who went over to Europe, a Ward or a Manigat, you know, that those guys happen to, you know, a Canadian college educated, trained player make it to the NBA? How important would that be? Is that sort of the you know, would that be kind of like a pioneer like you were talking before?
Give me 1 second, please. Who is it? Give me like 2 minutes, please. I'm finishing up an interview. All right, sorry about that.
That's okay. So would that be sort of like the pioneer that you guys need to, the Canadian basketball needs to kind of get somebody to have more people, more players stay up here in college?
I think if you look at this, I think 2 years ago, people would say that this is crazy. Because I think when you
what you're doing here.
Yes, I think people would say no way you ever have one Division I player, let alone 12. I don't think it's far-fetched for that to happen. Like, I think it's, one, the Canadian schools are so good academically. You know, two, I think if you know that you can build a program that's going to put you in a position to have the same type of exposure, you know, and I look at Dave Smart, Wisconsin played last night in the national championship game, and they beat them, Carleton. So I think, you know, and I think there's a lot of variables. I don't want to qualify it because I know those guys practice a little bit longer and they had a chance. But the reality is they beat them. You throw the ball up and two teams play, and they're playing in the United States National Championship.
Syracuse. Mm-hmm.
And they play Syracuse tough. And, I mean, if you look at their track record, I think they probably beat
Memphis, I think.
Four or five Division I teams they beat. So I don't think it's far-fetched. I mean, I think Scruggs, I've seen them play four or five times live. You know, I don't think there's many Division I teams in the U.S. that he wouldn't play on and have a really, really good chance. But I think the opportunity was there for him. And then I think if a young man has that opportunity and they get a stage and continue to showcase it, you know, I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched. I think it could really, really be, you know, something in the short-term future. I think it's grassroots builds. The AAU programs have already had a lot of success. You look at CIA Balance, you look at grassroots, you look at, you know, some of the other, you know, AAU programs. I mean, heck, you can even look at Canada Elite. You can look at all these guys are producing Division I players. You know, Stackhouse Elite's coming up here, and all these various AAU programs. So I think that area is really starting to manifest itself, and there's starting to be a lot of interest from these programs. High school now with us and with a lot of these other programs is catching on. I think the next logical step is, you know, the college and secondary education. I think it'll continue to grow.
I've talked to the college side, Canadian college side, and you know, one of the things is the scholarship issue. Is that the main thing? I mean, like, how you know that the guys are there and there's getting enough guys that you could fill it.
Sure.
But what's the scholarship the breaking point, if you will, to keep them up here?
I coach Division III, so I think I have a unique background. I mean, and I did it for four and a half years. When I was at Division III, it was common practice that we would beat Division I schools for guys, Division II guys. I mean, we would beat a Division I full scholarship or Division II full scholarship because Division III couldn't offer them. And I think people that value their education, 95-97% of the people don't play sports. So if you're going to a school, typically you're going to pay for education anyway. So from our perspective, our selling point was, why go to a school to just get a free education when it's not going to help you long term? And if you can go to a school and you can go, and let's just say at, you know, Carleton, or let's just say Ryerson or whatever university you pick, you know, whoever brought, say you go there and then you excel and people know your name, and then let's say you invested 60, 70, 80 grand in a college education. If you come out and you're making 100 grand, then you can pay that off a whole lot faster than if you're, you know, going to a school, you play basketball, and you got a free education, you made 80, but you come out making 25, 30 grand. You know, so I think a lot of it is, you know, I think you have to invest in yourself and you have to invest. But when you really look at a good education, is, I think it far trumps or supersedes going somewhere just to get a free education, in my opinion.
We're just about finished with the second year of this.
Yes.
Let's say the next goals that you have for this program.
I think it's just to continue and to build a sustainable model. And I think that Thon and Mature and Jamal are all here. I think now the first question was, can you do it? I think now the next question is, okay, it's how can we sustain it, and you know, and how can we track our guys, and how can we not only get our guys to Division I, but how do we get our guys to go to Division I and excel, to be on all rookie team, to be first team all league, to be great citizens, to be great people, to graduate. So I think our model is just to allow it to be sustainable and to allow it to track it, so that we can see, you know, continued growth in the guys as they continue to move forward.
Driving up here, it's an hour north of Toronto proper. Does that matter?
I think it's perfect. You know, I mean, I tell people when we bring families up and kids up on recruiting visits, it's hard up here. You know, you're not in a booming city. You know, you're not downtown. I mean,
there's no distractions.
There's none. It's if you love basketball, this is the place to be. And you're surrounded by great people. You're surrounded by great facilities. You have every resource you need. But you know, you don't have the luxury to be able to run downtown and go two blocks over to the corner store. So if you know, it's a great place, but it's definitely for basketball, you know, junkies. We always like that say.
Driving into Orangeville, there's the sign for Orangeville says historic charm, dynamic future.
Sure.
Seems to kind of fit this program too, no?
It's growing. I mean, I think the biggest, from my perspective, looking at it, and I think everyone has their little, you know, takeaway that they've enjoyed. I think it's cool we have drop-in basketball. And I remember the first day you couldn't get anyone in the gym. And now it's 25, 30, 40 little kids running around, chasing the basketball and running around with our guys. So I think the future is, it's scary to think where the future of basketball could be.
All right, I'll let you go with that. Thanks, man.
Okay, so the team did end up going 34-11 overall. And, you know, the hell road trip that they ended up, you know, being pretty, you know, being successful on in the States. You know, I think it's a real dynamic, it's a dynamic program that, to be honest, I really think that, you know, depending what happens with Maker and depending what happens with Murray, I think their doors are going to be, being broken down soon, with guys wanting to get in, especially, when it's fully determined what happens to guys who maybe stay, who can maybe stay in that extra year in Canada and then maybe go directly to the NBA. I wonder if that is a trend that might happen. But we'll see. I mean, you know, that was one of the things that you know, we were talking about. Nobody knows. You know, Moutier left, went to China. You know, there's Maker and there's Murray, you know, if they end up both, you know, maybe going directly from Orangeville to the NBA, you know, really nobody knows. I guess Exum was a case where he ended up staying, down in Australia, and didn't end up going to college, which if he did, he would have had to, wait another year to go to the NBA. So I guess there's a bit of a precedent, but you know, I think it once this thing's determined, you know, if it does go the way whereas guys can go directly from Canada to Canadian high school / prep schools directly to the NBA, not only will Orangeville be, you know, having to ship guys away, you know, say sorry, we can't take you all in, but other, I can imagine other programs, you know, popping up, you know, accepting international guys to come over and do it. I mean, especially if the connections are there to play against some American, high school competition in the United States. But fascinating program, great facilities, you know, you have to really be impressed, and you know, it's still a very, very young program. But you know, I think the guys definitely know what they're doing. Also had a chance to meet the owner, and owner/president, and you know, an intelligent guy who it seems to me, just based on the short visit, that really has his feet on the ground and knows that they have something pretty special in the works. So thank you very much to Coach Larry Blunt for the chat. Thank you also to Sonny Berrios, who we had on the show a few months ago from Canadian Ballers. I think I'm pretty sure Canadian Ballers, can't remember who, thanks for helping me organize that interview. And also had a chance to watch the NCAA Final Four, the two semifinals with him. So that was a lot of fun. So I guess that's the show this week. I asked around in the Facebook group, so there will be a extra show coming out. I think it'll come out on Friday. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it'll come out on Friday, and it'll be a non-basketball one. So, you know, if you see it, you come in there, and I'll say it, you know, at the beginning of the show, but you know, it's a fully non-basketball show. It'll be a baseball show from my trip to Arizona to watch some of the spring training. You know, next week definitely we'll have another normal show. So until then, just let you know that the song that you're going to be hearing is called "Time Keeps Marching On," and it's by Derek Clegg, and it is from the album "Half the Time You Wonder," and it of course is available on freemusicarchive.org. So go there for all the great music they have there, and we'll catch you next week.
If you spoke, would you speak well of me? And half your life is here. Can I put you down for a guilty plea? Life is so fickle. The circus just called. They're out of you. And half your life is brought to you by sponsors. If you don't get help, you'll be marked half off. Life is so como se dice fickle. If you build it up in your head, it will let you down. And don't let go of this, don't let go of this. You'll help your mother out. Don't let go of this. You'll drink your father proud. Lying is your only option. Don't wanna disappoint the ones you love. So lying is your only option. Half the time you wonder if you'd be better off in another body. The other half you wonder if you'd be better off gone. And half the time you wonder if you'd be better off in another body. The other half you wonder
Hi, this is Patrick Bauman, Secretary General of FIBA, and you're listening to Taking the Charge. Enjoy.